This is Jim Inkster. Coming today, we'll visit with Tyler Bridges, longtime political reporter based with the Picayune for many years and now reporting for The Lens and following the goings-on at the state capitol as we near the finish line of the legislative session. 4 weeks to go, and there's much happening. And Friday, a big development. The feds rejected Governor Jindal's plan for state hospitals, driving a big hole in the budget. We'll talk with Tyler Bridges about this and much more. And also, we are slated to hear from State Senator Ben Nevers, Democrat from Bogalusa, who has revised his Medicaid bill. And Ben Nevers is going forward with a plan that is being touted by the governor. Is this gamesmanship or is this the real deal? We'll talk about it with Senator Ben Nevers. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. We start the week with Tyler Bridges, reporter for The Lens, a nonprofit digital newsroom based in New Orleans. Tyler is formerly with the Miami Herald and the Times-Picayune in New Orleans. He started work in New Orleans 25 years ago in 1989 and wrote a couple of books about Louisiana called Bad Bet on the Bayou and The Rise of David Duke. And Tyler has been following the state capitol with vigor this session. We'll talk with him about this and much more, and he's just back from the Jazz Fest. You look
and
okay.
I'm tired.
How was Bruce Springsteen?
Oh, man, it's just incredible. I think I've seen him 12 times now, every time he delivers, and I think he gets a special charge out of appearing at the Jazz Fest.
12 times, so you must have seen him in other venues.
I've seen him in a bunch of other venues, yeah, and I said he always puts on a fantastic show.
It was like a 2.5 hour show, wasn't it?
And I was very close to him. He had this little stage he came out on to, and I was just a few feet away from that, and he was just drenched in sweat.
Well, I'm sure he did Born to Run, which would be a great political song for somebody.
It did, and I'll tell you, the song that may have sort of most captured me on Saturday was when he did When the Saints Go Marching In, a very different version. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, how many times all of us have heard When the Saints Go Marching In, I think this may have been the best version I've ever heard.
Bruce Springsteen approaching his 65th birthday and still doing it like few others have. These guys got a lot of energy. He obviously stays in good shape. He's 2.5 hours, that's a long time when you're indoors, much less at the Jazz Fest. I'm sure he was feeding from the enthusiasm of the crowd, which had to number several thousand, maybe hundreds of thousands.
There were a lot of people out there.
Yeah. Well, there aren't 100,000 people at the state capitol, but a lot of people could be affected by the ruling that came down Friday as the feds rejected Governor Jindal's plan for state hospitals. The six hospital deals denied Friday were estimated to cost $882 million in the current budget year. And so there will be some maneuvering going on in the last 4 weeks of the session, and this is now topic number one, I'm sure, involving the budget. A new wrinkle, a big new wrinkle. So what happens in the next month?
Yeah, right now, in fact, as I'm speaking, the Appropriations Committee in the House is meeting this morning, and they will be hearing from the DHH Secretary, Kathy Klaibert, to be discussing this issue of Friday night's announcement from the federal government. And I think Governor Jindal has made clear what his thoughts are, which is to appeal the ruling and push any sort of day of reckoning over to a later date, in hopes that the state won't have to deal with this.
You've been reporting about the session in The Lens, and there have been many who were concerned about the use of one-time funds to plug budget holes. The governor, who at one time was an opponent of this kind of activity, seems to have become quite proficient at it.
He has, and a group that I wrote about, particularly last year for The Lens, the Fiscal Hawks, sort of mostly conservative Republicans who are challenging Jindal, actually, ironically, from the right. So I wrote about the Fiscal Hawks last year, really going after this issue of one-time money. And Jim, for your listeners who don't know the concept, It's one-time money is money that the state may get from a tax amnesty program, the sale of a building, a legal judgment. So it's money that the state just has for 1 year, but the state uses that money, or it has, particularly under Governor Jindal, for the ongoing expenses. It's almost sort of like if somebody owed you $200 and you just got that money one time and you pay your phone and your light bill with it, and then the next month, how are you going to pay that phone or light bill? And that's what the state's been doing. And people like Jim Richardson at LSU, budget experts, they say that's, it's okay for 1 or 2 years, not too much money, but the general administration's been doing this year after year. And at a certain point, it's not sustainable. That's what the experts have been telling me. And so the House is going to be taking up the budget on Thursday. The bill has passed the House committee, then it goes to the House floor, and then once it gets through the House, it goes over to the Senate side. And in a story I wrote Tuesday for The Lens, I reported that what had been called the one-time money through something called Act 419, the legislature passed a bill last year, not to get too complicated here, but something called the Revenue Estimating Conference said there was a certain amount of one-time money, and the House Appropriations Committee last Monday took out that one-time money. But that did not solve the problem, as I reported on Tuesday. There is $800 to $950 million of money that there's no revenue source the following year. But because this Revenue Estimating Conference did not determine that it was one-time money, I spoke to the House Speaker this morning, Chuck Cleckley. He does not see it as a problem. But other state representatives, including Brett Guymon, who is also a Republican from Lake Charles, as is the Speaker, and he is the leader of the Fiscal Hawks, they're very concerned about, okay, if you can pass a budget this year, then how are you going to plug this big budget hole next year? So these issues are sort of potentially commingling of this, again, this issue of the one-time money that it looks like that the House will want to put in the budget for next year, and then this issue of this federal government saying, hey, you can't do what you're planning to do, Governor Jindal. Mm-hmm. And I think there's increasingly a feeling that among the legislators that I talk to that Governor Jindal has been trying to put off budget issues until the future, until he's no longer governor and he won't have to deal with it, so he won't have to make politically unpopular decisions today.
297-5633 if you'd like to talk with Tyler Bridges. And there have been some reports of late about the state's economic resurgence, a lot of new activity coming this way, billions of dollars of investments in different parts of the state. But the state budget is a mess, a big mess, and the governor has cut funding in many areas, and the two areas that are usually ripe for cutting, constitutionally, higher education and health care. Well, there's a story yesterday in the Times-Picayune, Louisiana has cut funding for higher education by over 43% since Governor Jindal took office. The reduction of $5,004 per student, higher than any other state. So the governor has governed as a steadfast conservative, and he has been reluctant to spend money and raise taxes, and he has cut in areas that are substantial. So he, for the most part, I think, though, Tyler, has been given a pass on this. The people are not up in arms. There may be some simmering on college campuses, but the public at large, I doubt that many of the people in Louisiana, as far as the voting public, is all that up in arms about the $5,000 cut per student since 2008.
You know, Jim, I would actually would disagree with you a little bit on that. His poll numbers, the governor's poll numbers, his public approval was 60%, I think, throughout his first term and partway into his second term, and it's now maybe 45% public approval, maybe 40% of public approval, and something accounts for that drop. And I would think that the cuts to higher ed and the not funding increases in spending for secondary education, and then also the cuts to the hospitals, I think that has had an impact in the public perception of them. But you make a really interesting point about the cut state aid for the state's colleges and universities, and some of that money has been made up, how? By tuition increases. So we have a governor who is dead set against what's called a tax increase, but he has certainly been okay with allowing tuition increases, which could be called a tax increase in another way on the families of college-age kids.
And each time there's a tuition increase, the cost of TOPS goes up. So it's a cycle that is not particularly good unless there are new revenue sources or cutting in other areas. And to this point, the governor has focused more on higher education than any other area for cutting, 43%. And this is a man who certainly values higher education. He came to this country as a result of his mother getting a job at LSU, went to Brown University. He's a Rhodes Scholar. But his actions are such that some would say his priorities are in other areas. Is that fair?
Certainly I hear those same questions. It was striking last week. The governor was gone twice. I remember previous governors I have covered, that they would not leave the state when the legislature was in session. They were constantly meeting with legislators, pushing their agenda. And what exactly the governor's agenda this session is it's minimal. I think most people would agree. And as a measure of that is how much he's been gone. What everybody is saying that he's running for president. Even David Vitter says he's running for president. And you wonder, why isn't he focusing on the issues here in Louisiana? The state's problems certainly haven't gone away.
He will campaign for president on his record in Louisiana. He has no other choice, and I'm sure he will accent the economic achievements that he should get credit for. But on the other hand, the things that are not so good, like these cuts to higher education, the health care fiasco that we're experiencing right now, the high crime rate, the exploding AIDS rate, a lot of the bad things that have stayed the same or gotten worse, I'm sure those will not be part of the governor's pitch to be president of the United States.
Yeah, and I think the governor, as he goes around the country giving speeches, and there are certainly statistics he can point to that show how much better things are in Louisiana. And you mentioned on the economic front, he's going around the state holding what I think the best term is a photo ops around the state to announce a new plant opening or a job expansion. But Jim, the question becomes, if all this economic activity and all this money is being invested, well, why isn't that being translated into higher tax receipts? And why is it the state's budget seems to be in perpetual crisis or chronic problems under Governor Jindal, and just raises these questions. A lot of states right now, in California, I just read a story about California. They're now putting a bunch of money in. Governor Brown wants to put a lot of money into a rainy day fund. They've got all sorts of extra money to spend. Why isn't that happening in Louisiana?
Well, you've covered local and national politics. What are your thoughts about the governor's quest to be president? Is this something that is achievable?
I tell you, Jim, I have more people who are immediately writing off the governor and immediately dismissing them. And this may be people who do not like Bobby Jindal. I think a lot of people I think a lot of people are tired of him and are disappointed that he's not dealing with the state's issues. But here's what I say to people. Don't underestimate this guy. Remember when he first ran for governor in 2003, he is at 1% or 2%, and he beat a lot of other better-known candidates to make the runoff against Kathleen Blanco and almost won that race. Then he came back in 2007. And was elected. He was elected again in 2011. Louisiana. As you mentioned, I've covered politics throughout this country and in South America as well. You got to be very, very successful in this state to win, and then to win the highest office twice. He's won the Super Bowl Louisiana politics twice.
All right, hold that thought. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 outside the area. Tyler Bridges of the Lens will return in 90 seconds. Jim Inkster, you're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. 5633 or 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. For Tyler Bridges, reporter for The Lens, a nonprofit digital newsroom based in New Orleans, where Tyler worked for the Times-Picayune back in the late 80s and most of the 90s. Wrote two books about Louisiana politics, The Rise of David Duke, and Bad Bet on the Bayou, The Rise of Gambling in Louisiana. Also, The Fall of Governor Edwin Edwards.
Yes.
He's back in the news. Have you noticed?
I have noticed. Let me just finish this thought before we went to the break on Governor Jindal. Again, I have so many people who are just writing him off and are so dismissive of his presidential candidate. And I say, look, as I mentioned, he's won the Super Bowl of Louisiana politics twice. You know, that's very, very rare. That's an extraordinary event. And then the other thing to remember is, when was the last Louisianan who was a serious candidate for president? Go back in history. Huey Long, maybe, and before that?
Zachary Taylor.
So the fact that Bobby Jindal has gotten where he's invited on the Sunday talk shows, mm-hmm. other states are inviting him to be their keynote speaker. You know, he's probably one of the 15 Republicans who will get the Republican nomination for president. I mean, that's quite an achievement.
Emily notes that LSU graduate Hubert Horatio Humphrey was the Democratic nominee in 1968, and he almost won. He almost defeated Nixon, and Hubert Humphrey once bounced a check at Louis' Cafe when he was a student at LSU.
That's great.
And calling from Louis is Wade. Good morning, Wade. You're on the air.
Good morning. I appreciate you taking my call. I really just wanted to send you an email that popped up in the financial survey, Motley Fool. Ranks Louisiana as number three in the nation in wasteful tax dollars, and they emphasize the failure in education, infrastructure, and health care. And actually, I think if Bobby Jindal's off campaigning somewhere in some other part of the nation, he just really ought to stay there, and we could get the lieutenant governor in trying to fix things that he's not doing.
All right.
Well, you know, remember, Edwin Edwards always has the best lines, and he said that Bobby Jindal seems to want to be the president of everywhere but Louisiana.
297-5633 is your number. Now, Edwin Edwards, when he was running for Congress, back in 1971, according to James Gill, Edwards went 9 months without casting a vote in Congress, and now he wants to go back to Congress. So sometimes politicians talk out of both sides of their mouths. Can you believe that, Tyler Bridges? Donald in Mid-City. Good morning, Donald. You're on with Tyler.
Good morning, Tyler. How are you doing?
Good.
I'm not disappointed. I always knew that just watching Governor Jindal from the time he evolved from Mike Foster, moving through DHHS all the way to become a congressman and now a governor, he's an opportunist. And he's promoting his own opportunity. And Louisiana is not on the agenda. The best interest of the state's not there. And before I go, I was just going to say, this state's going to be really, really bad off after he's gone, the way he's doing the budget with all of these tax credits without revenue coming in.
You know, I have to say, I don't know what political party Donald is, but as I'm in the Capitol, I hear Republicans privately making those same points, expressing concern that the governor's interest is not in Louisiana and that the budget problems, you know, that we talked about earlier in the show, Jim, dealing with this one-time money issue and then this all this Medicaid money, that the budget problems, maybe particularly that the next governor facing, could be just horrific.
Well, today, speaking of the governor, the Advocate, and it's Ask the Advocate question, does Bobby Jindal use his real name to assign official document bills, or does he use Bobby? Now, I thought he had legally changed his name. According to the Advocate, the governor has not done that. It says, in a culture that liberally uses nicknames, the state has no laws forbidding their use in official signatures. Governor Romer was Buddy, but he really was Charles Elson Romer III. Murphy James Foster Jr. was sometimes referred to as Mike. And Bobby Jindal has retained his name, his given name, of Peeoosh. And he signs bills as Bobby Jindal, but he files his taxes under his given name. Interesting. I don't know that it really matters, but the advocate has answered a question that somebody posed.
I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was great by the advocate to do that. I thought he'd legally changed his name as well.
Well, nothing wrong with either name, but he goes by Bobby, and that's the name that America will know him as when he runs for president, and I think he's running.
He's probably already running for president.
Already running, no doubt about it. Now, Tyler Bridges has covered a lot of Louisiana politicos, and he grew up in California and spent a lot of time in Florida. Those are interesting places as well, but there's no place quite like this state, is there?
Well, that's why I'm here. I made a decision 18 months ago, Jim, to come back to Louisiana to be a reporter because it's just so fun and interesting. Part of it is the lifestyle here, like the Jazz Fest where I was this weekend. But covering Louisiana politics is fun, and hopefully I'm doing something of a service for the public through the watchdog and trying to keep these politicians on the straight and narrow path. Mm-hmm.
And you have a long distance marriage.
Well, I do have a complicated life. That my wife is in Peru, and so I'm always going to Peru to see her and our daughter.
In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Senator Ben Nevers, Democrat from Bogalusa, who's been front and center at the Capitol. A couple questions from listeners that I'll start with you. What about the governor's switch on Common Core? Did this come as a surprise?
Well, it seems to be he's trying to line himself up as a very conservative candidate for the presidential nomination among the Republicans. And as you note, as the question indicates, he was a strong supporter of Common Core. We know now, we've seen the document that he signed along with the people at BSEE and the education superintendent to get the state into Common Core, the curriculum standards, and with the PARC tests. And now we know that the governor has moved away from that. I find it very interesting that he was very close, remember, with Chaz Roemer, who's now the president of BSEE, the son of the former governor. And Chaz Roemer in 2012 was very involved in helping the governor pass an education package, and they now are very strongly opposed, apparently, on this issue of the Common Core curriculum standards, as is John White, the education superintendent.
Eben in Mid-City. Hi, Eben. You're on the air with Tyler Bridges.
Hello. I had a question, sort of a comment. One of the reasons that the governor stated that he is not accepting the Medicaid expansion money is because after so many years, it will run out. But if he's using one-time money to plug certain things in the budget, isn't it the same thing that money will also run out? So isn't it kind of hypocritical, or exactly what is the difference between the two?
Well, I can't speak for the governor here, but you raised a great question. Is the Governor General's concern has been with accepting the Medicaid money from the federal government is exactly as you said, that I think it's the first 3 years the federal government would pay 100% of that, and then after that, I think it goes down to 90%. And so almost all the money would be covered by the federal government. The Governor General, like many other Republican governors, has said he doesn't want to accept that deal. But, of course, a lot of people think that's a lot of money that would be put into the state and would help people become healthier.
And joining us now is Senator Ben Nevers, who will stay with Tyler, and we'll talk about Medicaid and much more. And Senator Nevers had a constitutional amendment that he proposed that would have allowed Louisiana to receive the federal money under the Obamacare Medicaid plan. But that was shot down at the Capitol, but the senator has not quit. In fact, he has read the latest missive from Governor Jindal, who has offered a slightly different approach to Medicaid. And what's going on? I understand you're actually embracing the governor's plan, Senator Nevers. Is that right?
Well, Jim, this has never been about whose plan it is. It's about providing health care to the people of Louisiana. And I've said from the very beginning through the years that we need to look at how we can better provide, health care services at a rate that's affordable to our citizens, as well as provide good quality care for them. So I really took the governor's plan. He called it America Next Freedom and Empowerment Plan. And I just added Louisiana First to it. I do believe he's governor of our state, and certainly he should be considering our state as the first opportunity to really roll out this plan. So the plan basically, you know, allows, and he states, due to compelling and economic reasons, Louisiana must enact positive reforms to move the state health care system in the right direction, because the status quo of American health care and insurance is simply not defensible. I mean, these are his words. It's in my bill. And I want to assure you, it doesn't matter to me whose idea it is, whether they're Republican, Democrat, or whatever. We should take full advantage of dollars that's available to our state to provide the best possible health care we can for our citizens. So that's what this bill is doing. And certainly we can, you know, it further declares that Louisiana must ensure that the people have access to affordable, high-quality health care. Again, not my words, but the governor's words. Louisiana must seek to offer to its citizens a health care system that allows the patient to be in control, working with their own doctor and other health care providers. There's no reason we can't submit a plan to the federal government and ask for, you know, permission to implement it. And it's beyond me why a Republican governor would not want to use the federal government's money to provide better health care for our citizens, and also to prove that a plan that he plans on running for president with actually works.
Well, have you talked to have you discussed this with the governor, or are you just throwing it out there and seeing what happens?
No, I haven't discussed it with him. I'm willing to discuss it with him, and certainly I would hope that he's going to be at the committee Wednesday to talk about the great things about his plan. And I'll certainly we'll be hearing this Wednesday morning in our Senate Health and Welfare Committee. And I would, you know, think that he would be there in order to, you know, really project what he plans to do with this. I think it's some exciting language in the bill, and it actually requires DHH to submit to the House and Senate Committee on Health and Welfare by September 1 of this year, you know, an outline of how this plan would work. It also requires that it be implemented January 1 of 2015. And after all, there's $16 billion available to this state over the next 10 years. What a shame it would be to continue to send our tax dollar to Washington and allow that to be dispersed across the United States to most states, and certainly we wouldn't receive one dime of it.
All right. I was chuckling a bit because I rarely hear bills termed to have exciting language, but you're excited about this, and perhaps the governor will be as excited as you, but maybe in a different way. Some would say this is political gamesmanship, Senator Nebers. Are you trying to put the governor on the spot? Is that what's behind this?
Absolutely not, Jim. Let me say this. I've said from the very beginning when Affordable Care Act was rolled out, it never mattered to me whose name was on the plan. What matters to me is affordable health care for our people and access to care. And, you know, looking at the, you know, the things that have happened in the last few weeks, I mean, the deferral of payment of $307 million, and now, you know, Friday's revelation they have disapproved, you know, the governor's plan on a private-public partnership agreements in the state. I mean, it jeopardizes our people. And of course, I've heard all along, you know, that there were no issues with this being approved, but we found out, and we've talked about this through the years, that we were implementing a plan that we did not have approval for. And I believe we're at the point that we could jeopardize healthcare services to the people of Louisiana.
What's your assessment of what happened Friday with the federal government rejecting the governor's plan for state hospitals?
Well, let me say I did talk to Secretary Cleaver yesterday. Was kind enough to talk to me yesterday on Sunday about the issue. She says there are some other options available, and she's going to be pursuing those as quickly as possible while the appeal decision But I can tell you, I have one of the public-private partnerships in my Senate district, and it really is unfortunate that as smoothly as this went in my district, now we find that the hospital's in jeopardy once again, the employers are in jeopardy once again, and the most important thing, healthcare services to the people of our great state are in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. Now, the governor will have to presumably say yay or nay to his supporters in the legislature on this plan you have touted and now are offering as a viable option. Do you really think you've got a serious chance with this?
Well, I do. I mean, it would be hypocritical from my standpoint for the governor not to support his own plan. And I really never understood why he didn't try to implement this plan in Louisiana first, and that's why I named it Louisiana First. I mean, he rolled it out as a federal plan, and look, we can't implement everything that's in this plan, but let's take what we can implement and let's put it in effect using federal dollars that are available to it. I mean, he talked about tax equity, you know, giving all Louisiana consumers the same standard deductions of health insurance. Well, why don't we do that in Louisiana? Louisiana health insurance program that uses all federal funds and other funds that might be available to us.
All right. Well, the senator's obviously rolling in from Bogalusa to the Capitol, and he's armed for combat, and this is an interesting and creative proposal that he has come up with, Tyler.
Well, you know, I was saying earlier when I was talking about Governor Jindal, to succeed in Louisiana politics, you got to be really good. And, well, Senator Nevers doesn't call it political gamesmanship, to use your phrase. I can't help but think that's something at work, but he's very, very clever in taking the governor's own words and throwing it back. And as he said, you can't imagine the governor opposing his own idea. I think it's very clever by Senator Nevers, who's been very, very interesting this legislative session and raising a lot of interesting issues.
Senator, we're going to let you get to the Capitol, but I did want to ask you, well, what's your take on the collapse of the legislation that you offered on payday loans?
Well, I'm not through with that piece of legislation. As you know, it sits on the calendar of the Senate. I'm working, you know, feverishly to try to find some compromise to that. I can't imagine an industry that wouldn't accept 36% as being enough. But I'm willing to, you know, our loan sharking, you know, laws in Louisiana is at 45%. Maybe if I went up to 45% a year, you know, they would accept that. But I'm looking for some resolution, and certainly we all know that predatory lending is taking place in this state, and we need to put a stop to it.
Well, thank you, Senator. Always good to talk with you, and hopefully we'll look for an update on this Medicaid revision. This is, as you call it, exciting language. We'll talk about it. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Back with Tyler Bridges. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area, 877-217-5757. We continue with Tyler Bridges, reporter for The Lens, formerly with the New Orleans Times-Picayune and the Miami Herald, where he was nominated for a Pulitzer. Grew up in Palo Alto, California.
If I could jump this in, not just nominated.
You got it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Actually, it was two Pulitzers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I thought you'd catch me on that. Yeah. What were those stories about?
One was with the Miami Herald. We showed that is a story that your readers wouldn't understand. It was we showed that a mayor was elected mayor of Miami through fraudulent votes, including dead people voting in that election. That was one.
Okay.
The other story was the day that little Elian Gonzalez, who had shown up from Cuba on a raft and was then living in Little Havana, and the day that Janet Reno ordered the federal federal authorities to go in and snatch him from that home, and so he could ultimately taken back to Cuba to be reunited with his father. And we won. I was part of the team as in both cases. That won Pulitzers for the Herald.
Well, in the return of Elian Gonzalez to Cuba, quite likely cost Albert Gore Florida, in the 2000 presidential election, and ultimately...
And I covered that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was cost like him 530 votes was the difference.
Like 537, I think. And it cost him the presidency of the United States, and the world might have been a little different if Al Gore had been president rather than George W. Bush.
Yeah, well, of course, we can't. We don't know exactly, but I think that I think it's fair to say that Gore would have governed very differently than George W. Bush.
We might not have had a war in Iraq. Graduate of Palo Alto High School, right in the shadows of Stanford University, where Condoleezza Rice taught. And you went to Stanford, member of the marching band at Stanford University, the band that was on the field when University of California beat Stanford in John Elway's last game in 1982. You recall that one, don't you?
I actually had just graduated, but last year, I wrote an article on Elway for Stanford's alumni magazine, and I asked him about that. And if your listeners aren't that familiar with the story, it was the Cal on the final play of the game did a bunch of laterals, and then they ended up running through the Stanford band, which it ended up kind of moving on to the field, thinking that the game was over. And then in the end zone, the Cal player scored the winning touchdown and bowled over a trombone player who was a friend of mine. And so when I interviewed Elway last year, because that was his final game, and people forget that he led Stanford on an amazing comeback in the final seconds to kick the winning field goal. In fact, he completed a pass on 4th and 17 mm-hmm. from Stanford's own 13-yard line to lead Stanford to that what appeared to be a winning field goal. But so I asked Elway last year what he thought about that play, and he said, "I wish that trombone player had tackled him on the 3-yard line."
Now, if Stanford had won that game, they would have gone to the mighty Independence Bowl in Shreveport, and Elway would have finished his career in Shreveport. Instead, they finished his senior year 5-6 and did not go to a bowl.
And he probably wouldn't have won the Heisman Trophy that year.
Well, he was a great college quarterback and a great professional quarterback, and he's still around as the guy who's running the Denver Broncos, who took it on the chin to the Seattle Seahawks. But this Ben Nevers thing, getting back to this, Ben is now one of the seasoned hands at the legislature. And with term limits, we don't have as many of those as we used to. And I think another lawmaker from Bogalusa, 60 Rayburn, would somehow be smiling from his grave about Ben's political maneuvering here, basically putting the governor in a box to either support legislation he probably doesn't want to, or be against his own plan. That's Louisiana politics at its best.
And I think a key question will be where is the Senate president going to be on this issue? Senate President John Alario has been a very close ally of the governor, which is an irony to some people who remember the years that John Alario, when he was in the House, was Edwin Edwards, the Speaker of the House, and now in the Senate, he is Bobby Jindal's guy, and Alario probably has enough power if he wants to kill Nevers' bill in that committee. So it'll be interesting to see whether Alario wants to try to do that or not, because, Jim, you raise all these great questions about what Senator Nevers is doing for Governor Jindal. And again, just from a sort of strategic political point of view, I think what Senator Nevers has done is very clever. And as mm-hmm. I said earlier, he's been a high-profile guy raising sort of very traditional, sort of maybe even populist Democratic issues that you don't see a white Democrat do very much anymore in Louisiana. He's really sort of hearkening back to a tradition of the past and taking on what are politically unpopular causes, but he is certainly serving the constituents who believe in these issues.
Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about the moves by Robert Adley in this session, another senator who you've written about, a former Democrat turned Republican, but he's always been friendly to the oil and gas industry, and after all, he is a member of that fraternity. But this session, he's been really, really friendly to oil and gas.
Yeah, I wrote a very long profile of Senator Adley this session for The Lens, and in fact, I talked to him this morning. And he is moving forward on his various bills that would kill the lawsuit filed by the levy district, by the trial lawyers. He mentioned to me this morning that there was a compromise made where now Senator Lawn is taking over a bill where there was two sets of lawsuits. One was the one both against oil and gas companies, but one filed by the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority. That's the one that Senator Adley is trying to kill. And the deal last week means they're not going to try to knock out the lawsuit filed by two parishes, Plaquemine and Jefferson Parish. And Senator Adley also told me this morning that a bill that is particularly of interest in people in New Orleans he was going to try to change the nominating process for this, you know, the old levy board. And originally he amended his bill initially to allow the governor to take somebody off the board who violated public policy, which is such a nebulous phrase. And he told me this morning he's now changed that. You have to violate the law. But I keep calling him Governor Adley. That's what he was hoping back in 1995.
He did run. Not very well, but he...
yeah, he didn't do so well in that election. I think he got 2% of the vote. But Senator Adley's had success moving forward with trying to kill a lawsuit against the oil and gas companies filed by the Flood Protection Authority.
Well, Adley's he's a tough guy, tenacious, Vietnam veteran, and he's not the kind of guy you want to get in a fight with. But he's got a worthy adversary in John Berry, and those two, I would imagine, their antipathy toward each other will go well beyond this legislative session.
Yeah, although I've talked to John Berry, he actually has a very healthy respect. John wrote a very noted book on Congress and how it operates in Congress. And so he understands very well how Senator Adley operates. I'll tell you, you mentioned Senator Adley in Vietnam. He told me an interesting story. I was writing a story about the efforts to reduce the penalties for marijuana possession. Louisiana is among the toughest in the country, which is in concert with the state having the highest incarceration rate in the country. And so I was writing a story about an effort to take marijuana possession from a felony to a misdemeanor. This is a bill by Senator J.P. Morrell, but Senator Adley co-sponsored that bill, and I was asking why. You're a conservative senator. This is kind of a surprise why you'd be sponsoring this bill to reduce the penalties for marijuana possession. And he told me back in Vietnam, he said, you know what? I smoked marijuana. He said, all it caused people to do was to giggle. And he said, it was whiskey. That's what made people turn mean.
And now I think he's somewhat backing away from his own remarks.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I don't think. You may have caught him in a moment of revelation.
Well, I did publish what he said.
Well, yeah, I believe he said it.
And but it was interesting that effort to take marijuana from a felony to a misdemeanor, mm-hmm. which a bunch of other neighboring states of Louisiana have done, including Texas. The Senate committee killed that effort.
Well, Robert Adley is a force to be reckoned with, but so is John Berry. And for years, it was Foster Campbell out there all by himself, and now he's got John Berry and Russell Honoré in his camp. So there's some people now who are quite eloquent and vigorous on the other side of the oil and gas industry. But one of those very closely tied to the oil and gas industry who has taken the Adley stand is Mary Landrieu. She is she's backing industry on this.
Right, she's going to run a certain campaign in a lot of ways that might perhaps is similar to what Bennett Johnston did back in 1990 when he was seeking what was his fourth term, and you and I were talking beforehand, Jim, and now Mary Landrieu is seeking her fourth term, and Bennett Johnston ran an incumbent campaign. I'm doing all these things for Louisiana. I'm bringing back projects. I'm chairman of the Senate Energy Committee, and that was the kind of campaign that Bennett Johnston ran in 1990, and I think Bennett Johnston he lost the majority of the white vote in that race against David Duke. Duke, I think, won 59% of the white vote, and Mary Landrieu will probably be facing a similar challenge if she's able to keep her seat.
Yeah. Well, Louisiana has not voted out an incumbent U.S. senator in 82 years. And Mary Landrieu has defied the odds a few other times, but this is probably going to be her toughest race.
Yeah, the polls are suggesting it's going to be a very tough race for her. But we will see what happens in November and then probably actually ultimately in December.
Well, we'll follow it and hopefully have you back again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Tyler. Tyler Bridges of The Lens. We're joined in our remaining moments by Chris Garrity. He is head of innovation for the Super Bowl, and he will be in our fair city in a few days for the Louisiana International Film Festival. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well, and you're going to be a moderator of a session that highlights digital media, and that's a terrain you know pretty well, don't you?
I do. I kind of grew up in watching Facebook and YouTube and Twitter happen. I've helped build the Netflix social media expertise and created integrated promotions for Netflix and Apple over the past 10 years.
Now, are you on a speakerphone by chance, since we're talking about technology?
I'm sorry about that. I'm actually off my cell phone.
Okay,
can you hear me?
Yeah, that's a little better. So the Louisiana International Film Festival will be this Thursday, the 8th through the 11th at Perkins Row, and our guest, Chris Garrity, will be moderating a session on digital media, and this will take place Saturday the 10th at 1:30 at Perkins Row, and this is quite an event. We talked about it a bit last week with 50 film screenings, including God's Pocket with the late Philip Seymour Hoffman, and many others, too numerous to mention right now, but this is also a session in which we find out more about what goes on behind the scenes, and it's a master class, and I think you would certainly qualify as being a master in this category.
Thanks, Jim. I'm excited to bring two filmmakers and digital media experts to Louisiana, two people that I've worked with in the past. The first guy is a really talented producer who I actually met when I was at Netflix. He entered a contest. This is about 7 years ago to help break the world record for continuous movie watching. And the way I met him is he submitted this video. He's just a hysterical video to enter this contest, and he's gone on to have his own following online, and he helped build two digital studios, one of which is the Collective's digital studio. But he's been, since I met him, responsible for running, this is Matt Raub, and he's been responsible for kind of creating his own network on YouTube.
Matt Raub, who's, he's strong in this category, and strong is an understatement. Also, a gentleman named Daniel Ravine.
Dan has built a career in advertising. So he has helped a lot of brands nowadays are telling their stories online. So in terms of helping filmmakers grow and kind of develop skills, advertising is a great way to subsidize, say, your documentary. If you're interested in getting into filmmaking, commercials are a great way to build your chops. And a lot of brands are using online video to tell their stories. So this is something. Not only are they taking the 30-second commercial and expanding it into curated and sponsored content. The innovation right now is really happening online, and so that's something that we're going to talk about. As storytellers, you can really build your skill set by doing things on YouTube. YouTube reaches more U.S. adults, 18 to 40, than any cable network. You don't have to go very far. You can look at Jimmy Fallon right now is one of the top online videos, and more people are watching Jimmy Fallon online than they are watching Jimmy Fallon live.
There you go. Well, thank you for joining us today, Chris Garrity, and he'll be in charge of a panel discussion, a master class, Saturday the 10th, 1:30 Perkins Row, and it's all about innovation and digital media. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Looking forward to it.
And also, as part of the film festival, since we mentioned John Barry, The Great Flood, about the 1927 flood, Saturday the 10th, 11:30 in the morning. And that'll do it for today. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.